think the retreaters are much noisier than you guys.
So today is a special day for us. It's a special holiday dedicated to a certain holy being that we do practices for. Her name is Tara. It's the eighth moon today. If you look up in the sky when you leave tonight, you will see it's exactly half. It's a beautiful half, and it's waxing. And there's something really special about the energies in your body related to the energies of the moon, that when the moon is actually at this beautiful half point, then everything is in balance. And so it's a very auspicious day, and a lot of the Lord Buddha holidays fall on this day because they consider it to be like the most auspicious day of the whole month. Of course, we have other auspicious holidays that fall on different days of the month as well. But this one is like... like a child's joy. It's that kind of energy. So, I wanted to dedicate this class to Tara and everything that she represents. So I'd like to start with a meditation. First of all, simply fix your body completely still. Find the perfect space in which to hold your body, that perfect asana of meditation. And then simply listen to the currents of energy inside your subtle body. Fix your gross body completely still. If you don't keep your gross physical body completely still, you will never be able to hear the subtle currents of energy inside your subtle body. So start to feel that feeling of being very grounded to the earth, like pulled down by gravity. Getting your body nice and settled, letting everything fall. Let your shoulders relax down. Let your hands fall into your knees. Let everything fall into that beautiful downward energy. And then counterposing that is some kind of energy that's lifting us up. So buoyancy, like a helium balloon. And try to feel that current of energy inside your body, lifting you up towards the sky, towards the stars. And somewhere in between there, you find this perfect balance, this perfect stillness of body. And you hold that. It's the physical Xinjiang that Kishin Michael was talking about earlier today. The physical comes first and then the mental. So then focus inside of your body and again see it as completely empty, hollow inside. Go down from the inside, tip of your head. Down your face to all the crevices. See everything is this light, clear blue sky color. Just empty space inside. Go down your throat and shoulders and down your arms, into your fingers. Everything clear blue, empty space. Keeping your body completely still in that balance you found. Then moving down your torso. Down to your seat and your legs, all the way down to the tips of your toes. Nothing but hollow space. And then on the outside, don't see yourself as you normally do, but imagine that you are the holy angel Tara. You have a body of pure light. Try to feel like your whole body all at once, just beaming in light, sort of tingling, because all there is an outline, an empty space inside, an outline of light that tingles. Your body is the color of an autumn moon, which is like white with a tint of rose to it, but it's made of light. I like to imagine lately like a really thin, priceless porcelain vase that's white with a tint of rose and some kind of light shining inside of it. And then I get the color of Tara's skin. That perfect porcelain, translucent, radiant glow. And then move into the beautiful details of your holy face. Your face is the most achingly beautiful thing that you can imagine. It makes everyone stop and stare, men and women alike, whenever you enter a room or walk down the street. Stunning beauty. Imagine that is your face. You have long hair, the color of the sky, flowing down past your shoulders, beautiful long white neck. Beautiful budding breasts, thin torso, long slender fingers and arms. Go down to each of the parts of your body, your holy perfect form. Try to see them, make them perfect. Why are you so incredibly beautiful? Because you have so much love in your heart. Picture your eyes like filled with love. Everyone you look at, your heart just leaps to serve, to make happy. In the very center of your heart is a sound, a holy syllable, Dham. This is Tara's root syllable. It's her essence. It's why we see it in the center of our hearts when we are her. If you know the Tibetan or Sanskrit down, you can visualize it. Otherwise, you can either see it in the English letters, or you can just see a white ball of light in the center of your heart, and you can try to hear the syllable. Tom. And the ah stretches for a long time. So it's like a song. It starts with a t, but then it just goes ah. So try to hear the sound of the ah, like what song it's singing in your heart right now. And the song is like light. It starts from the syllable and it spreads out through the hollow of your body, filling your entire form with light. Tom is it's the door to all things. It's the sound which frees you even before you utter it. It's our love. Then imagine that the ah starts to get louder and it starts to burst through all the pores of your skin and fly like light out from this universe that we're in here. To all the corners of the world. Try to hear the song that the ah is singing as the light travels out from your heart. See it touching every being, one by one. See their faces change. The light penetrates their heart, touches their very essence, takes away all their fear, all their pain, gives them ultimate happiness. I like to go to all the different countries that I've been to, and then a few that I haven't, and imagine one by one that this song of Tom is transforming them. Don't be stingy. Let your light shine out brighter and brighter. More and more light rays carrying the song of Tom. but just see if you can start to stretch the light beyond this world to other worlds, in other places. You are Tara, your giving has no end. Your light stretches out infinitely. How does it feel to be an enlightened being whose light stretches out to the very corners of the universe? How does it feel? How does it feel to have nothing but love in your heart? And start to pull the rays of light back into your heart. Start to withdraw your focus from the ends of the universe back into your body. And for a brief moment, sit for a minute just inside that very tiny spot in the very center of your heart, the dot of the tongue, the source of all things. Try to shrink yourself down to a single point. when nothing else remains. But the song of the ah. You're used to being in your head, but move down, move to the heart. Drop your consciousness, your awareness down to the heart. Be there. Move to a smaller point of focus so that your body looks like as big as the tent. And you're this tiny thing inside your heart. Inside this big tent-like body, this drop of consciousness, this ah. Then you can come back to your gross body. And then slowly open your eyes, your mouth to me. So in retreat, I think one of the most beautiful things is the time of day that you get to be awake. I really love to watch the dawn. It's a beautiful time, the ending of darkness. And everyone in the desert is happy about it. And I like to sit on a special rock. It's my offering rock. And I like to listen to all the birds sing. They start as soon as the first light starts to come in the sky. It's a very beautiful thing, the first light. Unless, of course, you've been up all night, and in which case it's sort of a depressing thing. But I've had both. But this, I always wonder, like, who gets to be the first bird to sing that morning, you know? Like, who gets to be the first one to break the night? It's a magical time. And it feels like the birds, they never ever sing in the way that they do when they sing to the dawn. I spend a lot of time outside and I listen to them all the time. And sometimes they sing at sunset too, but not quite as enthusiastically as they do for sunrise. And it's like a prayer for them. And it almost seems to me that they think if they didn't sing, the sun wouldn't rise that day. And I, in this realm, this world that we're in, this world of karma, I'm inclined to believe that more than I'm inclined to believe what I was taught in my third grade science class about why the sun rises every day. So I like to watch the birds make the sunrise. And we have all sorts of birds. I think Rob and Donna can tell you all about them, if you're interested. But like blue jays come, and they're kind of loud and obnoxious sounding. Like you always know they're there, and they sort of, okay. And then there's like these really friendly towhee birds that just go meep, meep, you know? But then there's these like really, really gorgeous birds. Like they have these gorgeous, gorgeous songs, and they can sing like all different songs. Like, you know, the blue jays only got one song. Like it's just rack. But I don't even know what they're called. I think I have to ask one of my holy bird specialist caretakers. But there's like this, it's not an oriole, okay? They're littler, but they're the same kind of bright yellow and black color. And at least the guys are, and then the ladies are more subdued. And they have the most beautiful bell-like voice that rings through the whole desert. You can like hear the, you can hear them wherever they are in the entire valley. And they like to sing to each other. And one of them is my friend. And he comes and sings to me, and I sing back. And he tries to teach me all his songs. And he's got like, I don't know, 10, 12 different kinds of songs. And then sometimes he mixes them up to confuse me. And if I don't do it right, he'll like pause. Like, that wasn't what I said, you know. And so it's like teaching me how to wake the dawn, you know. Like, and it's incredible joy. Like the birds, their bodies are like shaped in a way that they're mostly heart chakra. Like that's just the way that they're built, you know, so they've got all this joy. That's why they sing and that's why they can fly. And sometimes I get sad, and no matter where I am, like I could be inside my house or I could be out under a tree, but they always know how I feel, and they'll always come and they'll always sing to me any time of the day and try to make me feel better. And all the desert animals are like that. They can hear each other's heart, and they can help each other. You know, like the piggies will come and brush up against your shin, and the lizards will come and do some funny thing to make you laugh. Like, they have their little antics if they know you're not feeling so well that day. Or the elusive fox will decide to show himself for like a split second, you know, it's like your lucky day. And this is the way of the desert. You know, it's, I feel like they're teaching me how to love. I feel like they're teaching me how to take care of people. And I feel like they're teaching me kindness. And at some point, you start to suspect that perhaps these animals are not just what they appear to be. Perhaps perhaps there's something far more special going on. Like, it feels like the whole world is like this divine play projected from the heart of Tara to teach you how to love better. And that's what it looks like in my world a lot of the time. I think, you know, I was talking yesterday about stuff that maybe you couldn't see and maybe never saw or maybe never even heard of before. I think you have to start to understand that there are beings around you beyond what you're used to, beyond human and animal realms. You know, you learn this in the Buddhist schools, all the different realms, but then, like, who actually thinks about it or believes it? And there are other beings, and they're all around us. I mean, they're in this tent right now. There are beings that are in incredible pain, like beings who have died a very sad death and who are stuck here due to their grief and loss or their anger. They're stuck to wander around for hundreds of years without any kind of physical body, and nobody can see them and nobody can hear their pain, and they're dying for someone to hear them. You know? And then there are other beings. There are beings that are quite beyond us. Beings that are enlightened or almost enlightened beings. Great high bodhisattvas who can take any form that you need in order to help you. And you have to get used to that. It's like someone who lived in America who had never been to another country, just not acknowledging that people of other races with other belief systems that looked differently, that dressed differently, that talked differently, that thought differently even existed. You know, because they had never encountered them before. It's like that. It's very parochial. So, it was about 2 years before the retreat was going to start. And things weren't looking too good for the retreat. there was one house that they started like 3 years before that didn't seem to be, that was my house, that didn't seem to be going too well and was actually no longer legal to be lived in. And then this was the 2 year period, you know. And then there was another house, which was like supposed to be finished in a year, and everybody kept holding their breath and hoping. And it was supposed to be a certain amount of money, and it ended up being twice as much that money. And then that was like the only two existing houses on the property, and we needed like 30 houses. And there were all these terrible problems, like the contractors would come and they would look at the sites and they would take one look at them and they would turn around and leave and never come back, because they said, this is completely unbuildable, I can't do this, you know, there's no way you can get a road to this place. So we had that. Then we had like this really strange problem with the septic thing, where like the ground wasn't permeable enough to be to have a normal septic, but then the composting toilets weren't legal, and then we also had to have something for the black water of the kitchen, and then blah blah blah, blah. And it was like these impossible hurdles that we couldn't overcome. And then there was the fact that we actually had most of the retreatants who came on the retreat actually didn't have any of the money they needed to build their cabins. So we had sort of like, where are we going to get $2 million? We had that problem too. And so we went on this 2-month retreat, like Geshe Michael and I, and there were some other people on that in the same valley at the time, doing their own separate retreats. But we went on a retreat here at, you know, in the valley, the retreat valley. And I was really trying hard to figure out how we could overcome all these obstacles, because, you know, I was at one of the world's most famous retreat centers, Vajrapani, and like they had like 4 cabins, and they were trying to get like a paved road for like 15 years or something like that, and they couldn't quite figure it out how to do it, you know. And every year, because it rains so much there, the road gets washed out and you can't really use it, and they get trapped there and they can't go to the store. And so they really wanted a road, and I was like, you know, these retreat center things, it's a lot of karma. It takes a lot of karma to build even one cabin. And I'm like, how are we going to overcome all these obstacles? So it was on my mind, and one day I was up at the dome, it was nighttime, and I decided we were doing some kind of mud thing. I was making the altar out of mud, and I decided to take a break and go up on the roof of the dome and just look at the sky. And I went up there and this being appeared. It was the first time anything like this had happened to me before. To meet this particular kind of being that didn't look at all like a person. The being came out of the mountain and it was the spirit of this land, the spirit of this place. Like, the spirit is like not the kind that is suffering, you know. It's the other kind. It's like this enlightened being appearing to you in the shape of a mountain or coming out of the mountain. And so I talked to this spirit and I said, listen, this is what I want to do here. I'd like to make this place a holy place. You know, and I told them my dream for the next couple hundred years. Because, you know, they're like 10,000 years old or something. They've been here for, like, my lifetime is nothing to them. And I felt like I got their blessing. And then after that, everything started to clear up. Like, at the end of the retreat, I started to hear this beautiful noise of construction. It's like the bulldozer noise. And you know, usually in retreat, it's like the worst noise possible, but it was heaven to my ears. I was like jumping up and down. Like, there's construction going on. And it was a different site, you know? It was a new site. And after that, like, I don't know, everything just cleared away. All the obstacles cleared away. We had some magic guy named Jeff that came and built all our roads for us and told us that all of our sites were actually septic compatible, and you know, it was news to us. And the composting toilets legalized, and all this stuff came together. And like all of a sudden, you know, in a period of 18 months, we built, you know, 29 cabins. It's impossible what we did. It's just impossible. Like, nobody does this. We are now like the largest retreat center in the world. Within a couple years' time. And I think we have to make good on my promise that we will use this place to benefit many, many people, many more people than just the 39 retreatants that are in here today. I hope that all of you feel like this place is yours and that you can come here and you can meditate here and do retreat here for many, many years to come, and that you would consider doing your own long retreats here once you're ready for it. And I really hope to make this place into a place of higher learning for everybody who is interested. And think about helping make that happen here. So, after that retreat, I kind of, you know, you get out of retreat and you don't trust the things that you see in retreat so much. And I was like, well, I'm the only one who saw it, and did I just make it up, you know? But then I had two other high lamas come to this place and confirm their existence. Which was sort of a relief to me, because I wasn't the only one. Like, Geshe Lothar came, and Swami Swarupananda came, and they both talked to me at length about it. And Swamiji actually said, no, there's not one being, there's three. And they're very connected to the birds. They'll speak to you through the birds. And they do. And so I didn't really hear anything from this being for a really long time because I was so busy and with all this worldly stuff. But then as soon as I got back into retreat, as soon as we entered into the three-year retreat, I started to be able to hear them again. And I asked for their help to help sustain the retreat and to make it flourish, and their message to me was, do white tara practice. I didn't even know they were Buddhist, you know? I was like really surprised. I was like, how do you know Mel White's arm? You know, but it's not like that kind of dialogue. You know? You can't really just get them to answer any question you want. They just like tell you what they want to tell you. But so I was like, White Tara, you know? Well, I mean, Palma is the Tara specialist around here. And there's like, no. You do Tara. You're Tara. I'm Tara. Everybody's Tara. Okay. Okay, Tara it is. And, I don't know. So that's how the Tara practice started in the 3-year retreat, was the message came from Tara, my mountain, to do Tara practice. And so who is Tara? Aside from the description that you got in the meditation, Tara is always depicted with one leg stretched out because she's always like on her way to help somebody. You know, she's ready at a moment's notice whenever you need her to step out of her meditation and come to your aid immediately. In the Buddhist scriptures, it's like she's the quickest one, you know. If you're in need, she'll come fastest. And that's what it means to see her leg stretched out like that. And they call her the Lady Arya. And of course, she's a totally enlightened being, so she's far beyond Arya. But I think the point is that, you know, Tara is supposed to be ultimate love. And then, in order to get ultimate love, you need to see emptiness directly. And that's the message there, you know. In order to have the kind of heart that Tara has, you need to be completely free of any kind of grasping to yourself. And they call her the mother of all Buddhas, because she's our mother. And she's going to make us into Buddhas. And she's the freer of every fear. Because fear is the opposite of love. It is because we are afraid that we grasp to ourselves. And it's because we grasp to ourselves that we can't open our heart. And she's the bringer of your heart's every desire. What do we desire? We desire to lose ourselves completely. In love for somebody else. Because that's happiness. And it's only the fear that keeps us away from that happiness. So, we have this sense of ourselves that we exist in this one small body. In this one small mind. And it's a very limited sense. of ourselves. If you look across the room, you can see how you travel to the edge of the tent. If you listen, you can see how you travel down the wash. If you follow your thoughts, you can follow them home to your bed. The more you meditate, the more you realize you are not really limited to this body. You can watch your mind going everywhere. It goes into the past, it goes into the future. The eyes is definitely more encompassing. It's a strange picture that we have of our small little body and minds. It's a stifling little box, and it's really lonely. Just as we are not limited to this body, we are also not limited to being alone. We don't know any better. Like, nobody has ever come along and told us, you don't have to be stuck alone in that tiny little box. You can actually be with somebody else. You can touch somebody else. You can actually not be alone. Like, it's a new thing for us. And also there's the fear. Stop with the books already, guys. Supposed to be the quiet one. You have the capacity right now to hear the hearts of every single person in this room. It is completely at your disposal right now. And it's such a beautiful way to live, to be able to hear other people's hearts. As you start to learn how to do this, how to really love people, you get smaller and bigger at the same time. Like your own body and mind starts to become very small and insignificant compared to all the other bodies and minds that are out there that you hear. And then at the same time, you feel like they are you. And so you become very vast. And they are you. Like, everybody understands projection, right? Where are the people around you coming from? It's a single source. a single source inside your heart that projects your body, the next body, the entire world. It's all you. They're all you. And all the pain that you see in the world, it's all your pain. And the interesting thing about it, you know, I sensed this hesitation yesterday. Like, I don't really want to take this pain on of these guys that died 300 years ago and are still here suffering. That's not really my business. You know, and you have this sort of resistance to it. You know? It's like if you see somebody who's sick and they're, like, physically you can see that they're ill. Like, maybe they've got, like, bumps on their arm or something like that. And your immediate reaction is to be like, I don't want to touch you. I don't want to get that. You know? And that's fear. That's the fear that I'm talking about. And the hesitation you felt last night, that's the fear that keeps everyone in the cycle of pain. That's the fear. That shying away. It's all your pain. And it's gonna follow you. It's like, that's a particular karma that you have to deal with. Like that particular pain. And it will keep following you around in different forms and re-manifesting itself over and over and over again until you feel it. Until you deal with it. Until you listen to what it has to say. Until you open your heart to it and you let it in and you just love. Because love is the only thing that's going to destroy the pain. It used to be a lush place here, this desert. There used to be lots of rivers. They're all dried up now. It's all the angry spirits here. There used to be oak trees all over this place. It used to be like a forest in the valley that we live in. I sort of have this dream that we can listen to them so well. That we could purify this land and make it a lush place again. We'll see what we can do. So, in the typical Galupa manner, I made a kind of a list of three different things that we fear on our path to love. And the first one, I think, is, well, I don't know. There's this sense, you know, the goal is to completely lose yourself in taking care of others. The goal is to completely forget yourself entirely and just immerse yourself completely on others. And their happiness and their well-being. And you say that, and these fears arise. There are certain fears that arise in your heart when somebody says that. Because you're like, yeah, that sounds like a nice idea, but nobody's really running to do it. You know? I didn't run to do it for a long time. So the first thing that comes up is, well, who will take care of me? Like if I just forget myself and take care of everybody else, who's going to take care of me? Like who's going to make sure that I have enough to eat and I get to bed when I'm tired and I get to drink when I'm thirsty Who's going to look after me if I don't look after me? Like, who will take care of my needs? And that's a... That's a worldview that this culture holds so tightly, you know, that if you don't look after yourself, then nobody else is going to do it, and you're just going to end up like in the gutter somewhere, you know. And it's so sad because it's the essence of what's causing us pain. Like that sort of grasping to myself, and that kind of selfishness that gets produced from that grasping to myself, it's the essence of all our pain. Like, I don't know, like the world of selfishness is a very dark and ugly place. You know, you walk into a room as a selfish being, and all you see around you are people you are afraid of and people you can use to get what you want. You live in this tiny little box all by yourself. It's really scary in there. It's really lonely in there. And it's like, even the nicest people, even the friendliest people, are still living there to some degree or another, you know? Oh, that person's so sweet. What does it mean, that person's so sweet? It means they make me feel good. It means something they do, like, makes me feel good. Has nothing to do with them. Or, oh, that person's really cold. I don't like them. You know, what does that mean? Makes me feel bad. It's all about me. You never even see another person. It's all about you, all the time. How lonely is that? It's crazy to live like that. It's crazy. Like you walked into a room today. What did you see? You saw people you like, you saw people you don't like. Why? Because of how they make you feel. Did you ever stop to look at them? Did you ever stop to think, how do they feel? What do they need? What are their fears right now? What can I do for them in this moment to make them happy? Did you stop and think that? Like the people right next to you, the people around you, did you stop and think that when you sat down next to them? It could be a very different world for you. You don't have to live like that. There's an underlying tension when you walk into every single room because of the way that you see the room. Because you're not seeing people. You're not seeing people to love. You're seeing, like, people you can get something from, or people you're afraid of, or, you know, people who make you feel good, people who make you feel bad, you know? I think back to the old days when I was first studying at Sixth Street with Geshe Michael in New York City. And I'm sort of embarrassed, actually, because I don't really remember many of the people who were there with me. Like, I remember the few people
who made me feel really welcome and who I talked to. And, you know, I considered my friends. And then I remember the few people, like, just one actually, who seemed to be a little bit jealous and kind of mean. But after that, it's like this haze of amorphous faces that didn't have anything to do with me. And it's like I was studying with them for years, and I didn't even look at them. And I didn't even see who they were, or what they wanted, or what they needed, or what their life was like. And I didn't try to help them at all. And it's embarrassing to me to go back and see that. I remember when Geshe Michael used to take us to Hao to visit Ken Rinpoche. And he would stay in his room, little tiny room, in the monastery. And Aura and I would have to walk a block and a half to go to Chunila's house. And Chunila is a nun. And she's an amazing being. And she's, they called her house the nunnery, but at that time it was her daughter Janice, and a woman named Maria Montenegro who lived there. And neither Janice nor Maria Montenegro were nuns, so I don't know why they called it the nunnery, but it's just because it was all girls. And then the girls got to stay there, you know, because you weren't allowed to spend the night in the monastery. So I would always get to sleep in Chunila's room. And it was really, really special to me because Chunila is a nurse, and it's a really hard job. But whenever I saw her, when she came home for work or whatever, she never looked tired. She always had this sort of happy smile with this kind of look of wonder in her eyes, as if she was always seeing something beautiful and surprising all the time. Like she was surrounded by angels or something. And I have this sneaking suspicion that that's actually what she was seeing all the time. And her room was rather small, so when I got to sleep there, I would sleep at her altar where she used to do her meditation. And I could never really sleep. You know, I went into this sort of half-conscious state, and I would start to dream about all her lamas. And they would talk to me, but by the time I woke up in the morning, I couldn't remember what they said. But it was a very beautiful time. And I always felt like I was in this secret world. And I felt so lucky, you know, to be next to her. And then one time we were there, and it was, the house was sort of filled. So I didn't get to sleep in Chunila's room. I had to sleep with Aura in Maria Montenegro's room. And Maria and Aura were really good friends, and I was kind of jealous, actually, at the time, because I wanted Maria to like me as much as she liked Aura. And she was a scholar, and she was helping Rinpoche edit his books, like all the books that you have from Ken Rinpoche, all of them were done with Maria's help. So I was staying the night in Maria's room, and I did something really inconsiderate. Like I got up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom or something. And I woke Maria up from this really deep sleep, and she sat right up in her bed, and she goes, what do you need? How can I help you? And it was like, she was half asleep, you know? And that was like the first thought that came to her mind. It's like, she goes to bed thinking of others. She dreams of thinking of others. She wakes up thinking of others. And I was just in awe at this house, You know, like, who am I sleeping with here? You know, I went to bed feeling so taken care of and so loved. But still, I didn't feel like following that. It was like this path that these other people who were so high could do. This path of love, you know, this path of taking care of others. And then I'm just incapable of it. And it was only, you know, through the kindness of my lama and 12 years and beating out of me every single shred of selfishness that I no longer feel like a bull in a china shop around these holy women, that I actually feel like I could stand next to them and say that I'm one of them. And it's a great honor to be one of them. So you don't have to be afraid that you won't be taken care of if you take care of others. Every single thing in the universe around you will take care of you. Like, even if there's no people around, then the animals will come and take care of you. Like, that's just the way things work. You will feel more taken care of than you ever have in your entire life if you start to take care of others. That's karma, right? And it's a beautiful way to live. And then you don't have to be afraid anymore. You don't have to think about yourself. It's such a headache. It stresses you out, gives you ulcers, makes you not able to sleep at night. It just makes you tense in your stomach or whatever. Doesn't do anyone any good. You know? Put your mind, put your heart out towards others. See if you can feel what they're feeling. See if you can listen to what they need. This is the door to emptiness, because you cannot see emptiness directly if you have a tight grasp on yourself. And no amount of meditation is going to get you to let go of that grasping of yourself if you don't start to open your heart to other people. Love is the way to let go of that fear. The fear is so strong. You know? Go back. Look at your fear. Look at your hesitation when I said take on all the pain. That's the fear, you know? And it's like, you can't just say, okay, I'm not gonna be afraid. It doesn't work like that, you know? You know that from experiences of when you were really afraid. Like, think about an experience when you were really afraid. You can't just convince yourself not to be afraid in the moment. You know, there needs to be some kind of, like, incredibly powerful, drastic force that actually totally transforms the fear into something else. And allows you to let go of that self that you're holding to that's keeping you from emptiness. Well, I only got through like one of the three things I was supposed to talk about today. So I guess we'll do it tomorrow because I wanted to do another meditation before we go. You were supposed to get a sadhana today, the Tara sadhana, and what I'd ask you to do, I'd like to ask everybody if they can keep track of the eighth moon and do something for Tara on the eighth moon and dedicate it to the sustaining and flourishing of the three-year retreat. This will help us, and it'll help the world. And if you have the time, you can do the whole sadhana. If you don't have the time, just like pick a prayer, you know. Make a small offering. Water and a flower is a good offering. Lots of water, okay? Lots and lots and lots of water. But the caretakers and the retreatants are all doing the sadhana every eighth moon, and it would be nice if other people in other places could also join in with us and do that. It's her way, you know, you don't create more from trying to hold on to what you have. You know, the Tara is like, she's teaching the opposite, you know? It's like, if you want something to flourish, you have to give. Like, you have to offer. You have to give all of yourself. You have to offer everything. And it's a beautiful practice to try and do that. It's the doorway to love, I guess, is learning how to give. It's like the first paramita, right? So think about that, you know. I would like to offer the sadhana to everyone. I hope we can manage to do that by the end of this time. So people could take something home in their hands and have something to do on the eighth moon. So let's do one more short meditation. And this is part of the sadhana. It's good to get the oral lineage before you go and try and do it yourself. So take yourself back into your beautiful Tara body. And try to find again that incredible stillness. Feel the pull of the earth, feel the buoyancy lifting you up. Try to find the balance between the two and then stay there, still in your body. Then imagine that your body starts to grow. You have a body of light, right? You have the most beautiful, exquisite form you can imagine. And your body starts to get as big as this room, and then past the tent, the body of light can kind of dissolve through the tent, can fly up into the sky, and and you start to get as big as the mountain, try, okay, it's a good exercise for your mind to try and do these shrinking, expanding things. It's good for your concentration. So, expand yourself out to fill the entire expanse of the sky. Until you are a body that's bigger than the earth. It's like looking down on the earth. And light is flowing forth as bright as the sun, but the color of the moonlight from your body in every direction. And from out of your body, this light shines and it creates this circle around you. It's like a protective force field. It doesn't have to be any color. It can be just like a see-through force field. And this is your protective sphere. Doesn't let any kind of negative influences in. If some kind of demon approaches the force field, as soon as they touch the walls, they are burnt to ashes. And then, from out of the tom at your heart, or that bright light in the center of your heart, comes radiant white light. It fills your entire body. And then it starts to spread out from your body like a shockwave out past the protective sphere, creates a ring of light around you. This circle of white light becomes like a palace, a crystal palace of white light. And all the illness and sickness in the world, every impurity of the body, it's all dispelled with the making of this palace. And all the impurities of mind, it's all dispelled with the making of this palace. And everybody's totally stainless. And then from the tom comes yellow light, fills your body. then stretches out past the projective sphere, past the white palace of light, and goes out to make a ring of light, yellow light around you, stretches up to make a yellow palace of light. And with this, everybody's virtue is increased a thousandfold. Any kind of goodness that anybody has in the whole universe just flourishes. And everybody who has ever studied any kind of Dharma, all of a sudden, they're brilliant and they know everything about Dharma. And all the people who are seeking meditation reach the highest level of meditation. Everything flourishes. Then from out of your heart comes a rays of red light filling up your body. Then they stretch out from your body past the protective sphere, past the white palace, past the yellow palace, to form a ring of red light around you, which stretches up to form a red palace of light. And with this, you have all the power in the universe under your command. Then rays of blue light shine out from the tongue, filling your body, getting rid of every dark and evil force in the universe. They stretch out past the protective sphere, past the white palace, past the yellow palace, past the red palace, to form a ring of blue light around you. Then they stretch up to form a blue palace of light. And with this, every evil force in the universe is subdued. Then rays of green light shine from the tongue, filling up your body. And they stretch out past the protective sphere, past the white palace, past the yellow palace, past the red palace, past the blue palace, to form a ring of green light. They stretch up to form a palace of green light. Giving you every quality of a Buddha. And finally, the rays of purple light fly from the tongue into your body, and then out past the projective sphere, past the white palace, past the yellow palace, past the red palace, past the blue palace, past the green palace, to form a ring of purple light around you. And then walls stretch up to form a beautiful palace of violet light. And with this, all of your attainments become firm. And these lights, these palaces of light, you know, your body is as vast as the sun, and the palaces stretch out like intergalactic spheres until they cover the whole universe. And they make everything pure around you. And then slowly the purple palace dissolves into the green. The green palace dissolves into the blue. The blue palace dissolves into the red. The red palace dissolves into the yellow. The yellow palace dissolves into the white. The white palace dissolves into the projective sphere. The protective sphere dissolves into your body. And then your body too starts to dissolve into the tongue at the center of your heart, dissolving from the tip of your head inward, from the bottom of your toes in. The outer body starts to melt down into the tongue letter until you are simply tongue. Tiny little syllable, then the tongue too starts to melt from the bottom. All the way up to the dot of the tongue. This is your most subtle state of consciousness. This is what happens when all appearances or projections start to dissolve and you are left with the last simple remnant of I. It happens whenever you fall asleep, and it happens when you dissolve into emptiness. So imagine that this last little drop just dissolves into itself, and as it dissolves, you go into seeing emptiness. Difficult to say. There's no more you. There's just emptiness. And then slowly come back to the drop, back to the tongue, back to your gross body. And in your mind, you can start to let the appearances of the world resurface. You can watch them, watch how you make them. And then you can slowly open your eyes. So the retreatants and I were at a Tara soak one night, and we started to play this beautiful music, and we kind of wanted to share it with you. So that's the last thing we'll do before we end tonight. I have some help. Thank you for being so quiet. It's really important for the retreatants. Sorry you can't sing with us, but please enjoy the music in your heart.